You're listening to FirstCast, episode 529. My name is Paul Garcia, and I am the host of this FirstCast. Joining me on this episode is Project Spirit's Benjamin Bornstein. How you doing, Ben?
I am great, sir. How you doing?
I'm doing well. You know, I haven't seen basketball in a while. It's been a few days since the All-Star game. I know that I read your piece this morning from on the college player. What's his name? Brandon Clark from Gonzaga, and you wrote about how I should be watching more college ball now that there's no NBA ball.
Yeah, well, you know, gotta give the people something they can chew on for a little bit while the All-Star break's going on, you know?
Yeah, so we're going to go ahead and kick off this episode. It shouldn't take too long for first cast listeners because there's basically been no basketball. There hasn't really been any transactions regarding the Spurs, no major news. So, Ben, let's go ahead and pick up on the rodeo road trip. The Spurs went to the All-Star break, 1-4 on the rodeo road trip. Really rough start for them. They're 33-26 overall. 7th out west in the Western Conference. Right now, projected to win 43 games this year, 6th on offense and 24th on defense. Kind of what is your take on the Spurs right now heading into the All-Star break?
I mean, they're kind of who we thought they'd be, and no one's going to let them off the hook, though. They're like you just said, they're very good on offense. The defense is less than ideal right now, and a lot of it is injuries. A lot of it is some guys just aren't defensive players on this team, or they're not as good as guys who are injured, like Derek White, who has missed a lot of games this year. Obviously, DeJounte Murray, who has missed the entire season and will not be back this year. That's a huge. That's a lot of length and a lot of arm that you're missing on the perimeter there for defense, especially for Murray. So you have a couple of bigs who you have guys who are either kind of defensive specialists like a Jakob Poeltl, or you have an offensive specialist like a Pau Gasol. And you know, you could probably argue that LaMarcus Aldridge is somewhere in the middle. He does well enough on defense that he's not a sieve, but for the most part, he's an offensive guy. And that's obviously translated on that side of the court, on that side of the ball, but defense, less than ideal.
I totally agree with you. And one part is that just the fact that there's so little room for error in terms of their health. I mean, just like you said, we know Dante's out all year, but Derek White, you know, he's only a second-year player, but he's this crucial already. Pop has been on the record of basically saying that he's their second-best player of the season. I mean, at one time, he said in an interview, I want to say to either one of the Express New fans, Tom Osborne or Jeff McDonald, or even the Athletics, Jabari Young. So, Pop's been on the record saying just how crucial he is. Patty Mills was basically saying he's our best, you know, wing perimeter defender out there right now on the roster. So, it's just huge, and you see the laps that they go on. I mean, those numbers that teams are scoring on them before that final game before they went to the All-Star break. I mean, teams are just lighting them up 120 nightly on the rodeo road trip. Teams were posting on them. So let's go to get into our second topic, and that's the final 23 games of the season. But Derek White is supposed to come back here after the All-Star break. It was basically the word out on the internet. But there's actually been no actual press release. I tried to look for any kind of clips or media from their practice. I haven't seen anything yet, so maybe that stuff will come out tomorrow when this episode goes up. You and I are recording this on a Wednesday evening. So if the Derek White news comes out that he's going to play on Friday, then that's why we didn't address it. So he should be coming back pretty soon. So let's go into the pros and cons of their final 23 games. So we'll start off with the pros. They have more games against minus 500 teams than against above 500 teams. So 12 against below, 11 versus above. They have 12 home games left and 11 road games left. They also have just 3 back-to-backs left. Now, the cons is that 7 of the final 11 teams they get against good teams are the Raptors, the Thunder, the Nuggets twice, the Bucks, the Warriors, and the Celtics. I mean, those are really tough teams. Plus, you add in the good teams like Houston. You got Brooklyn in there. You got teams like that. So, kind of, what are you looking at with their final 22 game plan?
What I'm looking at is what you said earlier. No room for error is what I'm looking at. There's little to none in those games you just mentioned. It's tough, but I would imagine because they're still going to be on the rodeo road trip for a little bit, right?
Yeah,
So
they have a couple games.
they should get kind of a backloaded home slate, which should help them because they do play considerably better at home. And I'm not entirely sure what that is. I mean, I'm sure there's data that suggests every team plays better at home, but for whatever reason, they play much, much better at home. There are teams that are like decent or decent or even good on the road, but the Spurs are not one of them this year. So you what they should hope for is all of the sub 500 teams are on the road and all of the plus 500 teams are at home, which of course is not a realistic expectation and it's going to happen, but you have to hope that you get more of those down the road. And they play the Raptors this week, like you said, Friday. That game has many meanings for the Spurs and Spurs fans mostly. Very salty and bitter Spurs fans who enjoy, doing a little bit of Salt Bae action here with how much bitter and saltiness is going on. But that they got to treat it like any other game. They can't really treat it like, "Oh, we got to go out and we got to kill Kawhi Leonard. We got to end him. We're gonna beat the crap out of him." It's not gonna work like that. It's not. Bad things are gonna happen if you do that. I guarantee it. Just like how they guarantee you like the way you look at Men's Warehouse, I guarantee you will not like the way the Spurs look if they try and go after Kawhi Leonard that game. It will not end well.
So I actually got the stat for you. At home, they feel like a 57-win team. On the road, like a 29-win team.
That's
that's home means to the Spurs. And again, 12 of those games are at home to end the year, but 11 on the road. And I think another factor here is that they can't just walk into those games against those bad teams, the below 500, because they've lost big games. Like, they lost to the Bulls before. They've lost to the Magic. They've lost to the Suns as a notable loss. So those aren't even automatic wins, those 12 games. So I wanted to ask you now, let's look at some of their win projections. Over on Cleaning the Glass, they have them right now projected to win 43 games. So that's basically saying they go 10-13 the rest of the way. I have a spot where I just kind of crunched all the records against good teams, against elite teams, against bad teams. And so I projected them to go with 46 wins, which is 13-10 the rest of the way. If they want to get that, that Spursy 15-win season, they'd have to go 17-6, which is really tough. So what window do you think they'll end up in that? That 43-45 range, the 46-49, or 50 and above win range?
I think 50 is completely unrealistic for this team. 50 wins, not happening. Do not get your hopes up. If somehow some miraculous win streak happens, sure, celebrate in the streets and claim that Greg Popovich is the greatest coach of all time and that he got to the players and whatever. You can say whatever you want. If they get to 50 wins, I should make some ridiculous bet where I have to eat something that's not edible, but I won't do that because I cannot leave it up to chance. However, I will say the Spurs, realistically, I think are closer to that 40, 43, 44, maybe 45 win range. I think that's the window. That's going to be their sweet spot. I think that's where people need to set their expectations. That's the big thing. I think a lot of people are going to say, "Oh, well, it's the Spurs. They have to win. They have to get to 50, or they have to win, 48 games or whatever. They have to get close to 50." And it's like, if the Spurs make the playoffs, they're going to be pretty happy. And I think people should be pretty happy, even if they're the eighth seed, because you've got your playoff streak. The Spurs have proven they don't need lottery picks to do great things with players. And, even if they did decide this was the time to start tanking, which they will not.
Yeah.
But if for whatever reason they decided, "Guys, let's tank now," they would not do a good enough tank job to get even a decent lottery pick in this year's draft. They would have to drop to the top 10, and there's no way that would happen. There's just no way with how bad some of those, the top five picks are.
Imagine if the Spurs and Knicks were taking in this game coming up on Sunday, and they were both going to lose. That would be funny. Anyway, yeah, you're right. I mean, they're right now like 19th. I mean, they pick 19, should I say? So yeah, and then those the Phoenix, the New York, the Cleveland, the Chicago's. They have such a huge lead in the tanking game. I'm with you, Ben. Where if they can't stay healthy, I think they're in definitely that 43-45 win range. Now, if they can stay pretty healthy this last 23 with Derek White back, with Rudy Gay staying healthy, then I could give them maybe 46-48 at max. But I really like you. I cannot see a 50-win season. I mean, again, seven of those final 11 teams are teams that are winning 600 more winning percentage of 600 or better right now in terms of their schedule remaining. All right, Ben, let's move on to our third topic, and that's the March 1st playoff waiver deadline. So it's basically 8 days after this podcast goes up for teams to waive a player so that way the player is eligible to sign with the playoff team. So the one guy that's kind of been in the headlines that Spurs is Pau Gasol. Now, he didn't get traded after the deadline. There was some rumors that he didn't want to seek a buyout, but he kind of shot those rumors down right away. He said he doesn't know where that came from. He even questioned who the source was. It was a really kind of shady article because it came from ESPN Deportes, but they didn't quite give like a quote or so, like, you know, just didn't say like we've heard this or so and so said this. It wasn't clarified very well. So I mean, really, if the Spurs wanted to buy him out, they'd have to come to an agreement. He has 23.5 left in terms of this season and the 6.7 next year. So that's 23.5 million. And you'd say about maybe you'd probably give up like 1 or 2 million. That's basically the veteran's minimum. So my first question to you is, do you even see them buying him out at least this season?
It's tough. The money that they would have to swallow may not be worth it, which sucks if you're the Spurs, because I think if you're the Spurs, you have to get rid of him. He's, one, his contract is an albatross. He's not playing up to his contract, and they just got to get him out of there. He is just not helping the team at this point. He's not seeing, and it's part of it is he's not seeing enough game action because he's injured at parts. And then when he is in, he is a total defensive liability, and that's not something that Greg Popovich has ever been known to tolerate, at least for long periods of time. So I think he's being patient with this team because he knows there are injuries and he knows he's kind of cobbling things together, and he's got kind of a mishmash of players that probably wouldn't normally ever play together. Like, you would never think if you're the Spurs, you didn't think you were going to have to pick up Dante Cunningham this year.
Yeah.
You didn't think you were going to be playing Drew Eubanks in games.
He's played a lot of games. He's got a lot of play.
Yeah, granted, he's done well with the time he's given, but sure, that's not a guy Spurs thought they were going to, I mean, they were going to have to play decent minutes. So it's a very weird Spurs season, and that's the reality that we are dealing with this year. And, you know, fans can get upset, and they have gotten upset because mad fans on Twitter, rah! Whatever. Voice your opinions. None of it matters because the Spurs are going to Spurs. They're going to do what they want. They don't care about your opinions. Or at least they're not going to let you know that they care about your opinions, and they're going to go about business as usual because they have rings and you don't.
Yeah, and with Pau, I really don't see it either in the next 8 days for them to buy him out. You know, just, again, like you just said, eat 23.5 million that he has left in his contract. You know, I could see where he might be get a little more vocal in terms of, like, there was a weird quote that he said that where he's like, I'm earning my money, but I'm not really like working for it because he's not really playing. He's saying he needs to get on the court and play. So Powell's the kind of guy where he definitely feels like he needs to be out there playing, and he doesn't want to waste the end of his career basically just sitting on the bench. But Pop has already shown that after the trade deadline, he's going to bench him and give him a lot of DFPs if the matchup's not right for him. He's giving Jakob Poeltl those minutes instead. So that's, you know, I don't think they'll buy out Powell. As far as adding any spend, you know, some of these available things. There's Greg Monroe. There's Martin Gortat. There's the Austin passing Milos Teodosic. There's Carmelo Anthony. There's Wade Baldwin the fourth. I mean, there's really not a lot of guys out there. Do you see them waiving someone and possibly adding one of these buyout guys?
First, I would like to LOL at Carmelo Anthony. The Spurs will never touch that guy for multiple reasons, but hilarious that his name comes up and people still think, oh, the Spurs should go after Carmelo. They could get him for cheap. Yes, and ruin everything that they have worked for this season in a single stroke. Sure, you could do that. A guy I do like, though, for the right price is Marcin Gortat. One, because I love him from his Orlando Magic days and his Phoenix Sun days. Two, he's got a great nickname. He's the Polish Hammer.
Yeah, the Polish
and
Hammer.
Three, he does a little bit of everything on offense and defense. I think he would be a really good fill-in. Granted, I have no idea who the Spurs would even waive. They would have to
probably Pondexter.
So a Quincy Pondexter. Could they even send Drew Eubanks down to the G League, or have they signed him to a 2-year deal?
He's on the G League, but you can't add a player. He and Ben Morton is like different players. They're on the 17-man roster, but you can't fill in the spot with another player.
Okay, so I mean, Quincy Pondexter. That's the one guy you could probably waive. Maybe Dante Cunningham, but I would argue he's actually playing too well to be waived.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't. But yeah, Quincy Pondexter, definitely a candidate. You throw in Marcin Gortat there and give him some runs, see what happens. You can probably teach Pearl a thing or two, and it'd be fun. I would enjoy it. I wouldn't mind if someone got me a Marcin Gortat jersey. I'd wear it.
I wouldn't be really excited, honestly. So the fact that they're not gonna, they're not gonna help. I don't think they crack top 9-man rotation. Any of these guys. Although Milos is obviously on the list, he's my favorite player. People know that. They follow me on Twitter. I'm a big Milos fan. But for this Spurs team, he's not gonna fit. And you're right about Milo. I mean, the one argument I've seen from fans is like, well, he shoots mid-range jumpers. This is a team that shoots mid-range jumpers. Yeah, but that team needs defense, and that's the one thing he's not gonna bring to the table is defense. So I don't think Melo is an option. As far as Gortat, I think because they already have four centers, they have Powell, they have Proto, they have all different five, they got Netu. It's just too many guys. I mean, the top whatever is not in minutes. And so right now, I don't see a guy right now in the bio market that they would risk waiving Pondex to bring in. I mean, I like Jared Lynn when he got released. He would have been a good point guard for this while Derek Whiteside, but who was the Toronto picked him up. I like Wesley Matthews, but he got picked up. And so there's a lot of players that didn't want to come to San Antonio that were available at one point. All right, Ben, let's go ahead and move on to the last topic, and that's kind of previewing the upcoming three games for the Spurs remaining on their road trip. So they are 19 on the road. They're fifth offensively on the road and 28th defensively. So, yeah, on the road, that defense is just gone. The offense at least keeps them winning a few games, at least 11 games. So their first team, like you mentioned, is a big one. It's going to be an emotional night for DeMar DeRozan and maybe Jakob Poeltl, because he's going back to Toronto for the first time since he got traded in the summer. It's on Friday night. Raptors are just really good at home. Like you were mentioning, you don't set your expectations high for the Spurs to beat them there in that building. The Raptors are 24-5 at home, 10th on offense, and 7th on defense in the Air Canada Center, I believe is the name of the arena. So, yeah. So, obviously, we know that I won't get into the booth like he did in San Antonio. He's really fan of his home fans. But I think one thing you're going to see is DeRozan is going to get a really warm embrace, now that he's back. Toronto fans love him to this day. You always see a lot of admiration for him from that fan base. Even the media up there, respects DeMar and really, really enjoyed their time covering him. So for him, I think that could be a little tricky because, when everybody's like cheering for you, it kind of makes you feel a little bit like Danny Green kind of that made you really struggle in San Antonio. And not because people were booing him, they were cheering for him. Every time he touched the ball, they cheered. It kind of felt like he was out of his element. So there's also that type of approach with it, too, to watch. So who do you have been on Friday between the Spurs and Raptors?
I have to take the Raptors. I mean, this seems like a no-brainer to me. Although, Spurs coming off a break, time to heal some things, get their act together, but I think Toronto at home, like you said, just too good at home. Yeah, and that's going to be the difference. And I think DeMar DeRozan will actually have a good game.
Yeah,
I think the cheers, assuming the crowd isn't booing him, they're cheering him and, they welcome him back. I think he's going to put on a show for them because he didn't want to get traded from Toronto. He was he was really upset about it for a while. And, there's kind of a big deal made about it. And people were wondering, oh no, is he going to play hard for the Spurs? Does he really want to be here? That kind of stuff before the season. And, he kind of calmed everybody down. He's like, listen, I get it's part of the business. I love Toronto, but I'm here to play. We're going to play. And it was fine. But I'd love to see DeMar DeRozan put on a little show in Toronto, maybe keep the Spurs in it for a lot of the game. And I don't think they win, but I think they'll make it a game.
Yeah, I'm taking Toronto like you. Again, just because even though I feel like the Spurs might, you know, they've had a few practices after the All-Star break and Terrified might be back, I still don't see them beating Toronto at home. You know, Toronto's out here putting in Marcus Gasol. They're just getting, you know, they're just getting that much deeper on their roster. And then again, even if they're well, I still don't see it for chance, and I'm going to go with the Raptors. So then, Ben, on Sunday, the Spurs traveled to New York to play the Knicks in the Garden. The Knicks are not very good. They're 4-23 at home, 29th on offense, 26th on defense. And like we mentioned earlier, they're trying to tank. They're trying to get, you know, Zion Williamson that 14% chance of drafting him. So who do you have in this game on Sunday for the Knicks?
Oh, I mean, this has got to be the Spurs. The Knicks are actively trying to lose as many games as possible. They want the number one pick. They're not going to come out and try and beat a superior Spurs team here. I mean, they might take their shot at a Phoenix or even a Brooklyn or, you know, a couple other lower level teams that might come in, but I don't think they're going to really go and take their shot at the Spurs.
Yeah, and so I'm with you. I'm taking the Spurs. You know, actually, the Spurs have had trouble in New York. I remember they lost a few years. There were a few contests there in the Garden, but again, I'm still the fact that Phoenix, right? I mean, New York is right there with Cleveland and Phoenix too. They all have a 40% chance at that number one pick at Zion. So I really think the Knicks are going to try to mess up those chances. So they will
not lose. Trying for Zion.
Not trying for Zion is the motto. And what's good is that Cleveland two more times this year. So I mean, that's definitely I just looked at the top three. All right, Ben, let's go to a tricky game to predict here. It's Monday night, so it's the second out of a back-to-back in Brooklyn at the Barclays Center. The Nets are actually really good this year. They're 17-13 at home, 15th on offense at home, and 23rd on defense. So who do you have in this game between the Spurs and Nets?
This one's a bit tough. Brooklyn has been hot recently. D'Angelo Russell has been playing very well. He has been great. He probably should have gotten more All-Star love, to be honest. But didn't happen, unfortunately. But he has been great. That team has some nice pieces. There are, I don't know. It's a bit of a weird team. And Spurs third game in 5 nights on the road. Third road game in 5 nights. It's the second of a back-to-back. Yeah, I don't know. It's tough. It's tough because those stats you just mentioned. Brooklyn is mediocre on offense and terrible on defense. So, you know, who's going to play better D that game? Are the Spurs going to step up and play better D? Whoever plays semblance of defense in that game is going to win. I like to think it'll be the Spurs, and Coach Popovich is going to say, listen, I know it's a tough one. It's 3-5, second of a back-to-back, but we got to have this one. And I think they do need that one. They need to have that one. And so I think they will pull it out. I don't think it will be a pretty game at all, but I think the Spurs will pull it out.
I'm with you. And again, I had so much trouble picking this one because, again, second out of back-to-back, like you mentioned, Brooklyn's a good team. I took the Spurs again because I think that now this is the third game having Derek White back in this scenario. They're finally healthy. Everything's starting to click a little bit better. You know, they have to work on stuff against the Knicks, both offense and defense. You know, if Pop wants to run a play on offense, okay, run against the Knicks. You want to try to take a different scheme on defense and try it against the Knicks. So I feel like they'll be a little bit more cohesive and tuned by that Brooklyn game. It wouldn't shock me if they lose, though, because just because Brooklyn's a good team, you know, we both said that. They almost beat a good game against the Spurs here in San Antonio. So I'm with you. I'm taking the Spurs as well. So we're both predicting that they're going to go 2-1 in these next three games, and that would basically give them a Rodeo Road record of 3-5 sets the case. So we'll see how the Spurs perform here to finish that stretch. All right, Ben, so before we wrap up, our first cast listeners, please follow Ben on Twitter. He's @the_Boomstein. Again, it's @the_Boomstein. Continue to check the ConnorSpurs.com. Steven will conduct an analysis of the game start we played again. So check Steven Anderson's pieces. Our new writer, Noah Amato George, or Noah Majaro George, one of those two ways to say his name, he wrote a piece on Jakob Poeltl, exploring the Spurs' forgotten man. Ben, you have a piece on your Spurs prospect watch this week on Brandon Clark, a 6'8 forward from Gonzaga. I read your piece earlier this morning. So can you give the fans a little bit more details about that player?
Yeah, Brandon Clark, man, he's great. He is a guy a lot of Spurs Twitter has wanted me to write him up, and I wanted to wait a little farther into the season so there was more to watch and see what he's improved on from this year, from last year to this year. The kid is phenomenal on defense. He has great awareness. He can jump. He gets up quickly. Gets up high. He gets up off 1 foot, off 2 feet. It doesn't matter. He played some great. He was one of the guys who was playing some great defense on Zion Williamson in the Duke game that Gonzaga beat them.
Oh wow!
So him and Rui Hachimura were two guys playing. Were kind of both playing him. Brandon Clark, phenomenal. He averages three blocks a game. Or it might be three blocks per 36, but or per 40 because it's college. But you have to read the piece because I wrote it better than what I'm speaking it. But he is a guy who is improving on offense as well. His shot at San Jose State or where his first college, I think it might have been San Diego State. I can't remember off the top of my head, but. It was atrocious. It was load up to the side of his head, go up, and his legs are splaying out in two different directions. And now he's got his shot. It's up in front of him. And it's a little mechanical, but it's good form. It's easily repeatable. And it's a clear improvement over what he started with. So he has shown that he can make those improvements. And working with the shooting coach in San Antonio, I think will do him some wonders as well, but he is a guy who can come in immediately and make a difference on defense. He will not. He is a low usage player as well, which is huge for the Spurs because they're going to have other guys who need the ball in their hands. He can be a guy who cleans up as kind of a four in the small ball, or he can be a three who guards a couple different positions. So I think he would be a great pick. Mock drafts have him all over the place. Some of them have him going as high as 19. Some of them have him going middle of the second round. It's tough to get a read, and a lot of it is going to end up becoming, what the order of the actual draft is, and then team needs and seeing if things get done, seeing if trades or signings happen before the draft, because that will change priorities for different teams and thus make him drop or rise or stay the same, whatever. So it's a very interesting case for him. I think he's great value for the Spurs with the Raptors pick they're going to have. I think he would be great value there. And I would say grab him if the Spurs don't grab PJ Washington, who I have been seeing has been trending as a Spurs pick in mock drafts. And he is also another great prospect if you get a chance. I did write him up as well. Go looking for him. Much more offensively inclined. Still solid on D, but much better offensively than Brandon Clark.
Okay, yeah. So, again, first, guys, you can check out Ben's latest piece on Brandon Clark. And also, like you mentioned, on P.J. Washington. And that's what I was kind of wondering. Where's his draft projection? And, again, it's good that the Spurs have those two ranges. Right now, if it was today, they'd have the 19th pick or the 29th pick, with Toronto, or the 28th, whatever that Toronto pick is at. So it's good that they have a little bit of variety, or if they wanted to, they could try to package them together and try to move up even higher if they want to get into the lottery. Possibly that could be an option for them this summer as the draft approaches.
And I've seen that suggestion as well. And the question is, with that package of picks, how high could they get though? Can they get into a top five, or can they get into a top 10, or would it just be lottery? That's the thing I don't know.
Yeah, that's a good question. The reason why I talk about that trade scenario is just the roster stuff, man. There's as long as they don't make trades with some like huge trades to the roster, there's really like not a lot of excuses for new players to come into this team. Like, I think there might be just barely enough spots for those two picks if they bring them in. If not, I could definitely see that scenario where they try to trade them, put them together, and get a player, a little bit up higher in the draft.
I've seen some suggestions of doing a draft and stash, one to save the money, and two to so you have a guy 2 years down after a couple guys leave or contracts run up.
For sure, that's like I mentioned, there's just really no roster spots if they don't. I mean, outside of getting rid of a moving policy this summer, either trading him or waiving him. There's just not a lot of roster spots, honestly, unless they make some huge trades this offseason. So again, we'll continue to watch that scenario. Again, if Brandon Clark's the latest piece that Ben wrote up. My last piece on Monday's first guest this week was revisiting an old benchmark from prior Spurs seasons. That's, again, I like to use that quote from Brett Brown a few years ago, where he kind of just talks about the way the Spurs evaluate their season. And so I have all the data in there and those kind of benchmarks that they use. Colin Reed's latest piece is on the Spurs' post-All-Star break push, playoff push, I think. And Colin goes through a lot of the Spurs' opponents, like win percentage and the strength of schedule and all those things like that. And Ben and I kind of touched on some of those details as well here. In our conversation. And then lastly, if you listen to us on iTunes, leave us a rating and review. Thank you. Have a great day.